Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Sunday, May the 8th, 2022. And this is not just any Sunday. It's actually Mother's Day. So happy birthday to all the mothers in your life and other people's lives. And today is an interesting podcast as I sort of return to my interest in politics and the promotion of independent candidates, which I think are absolutely necessary for the continuing function of our democracy. And this was what I hope to be a series of podcasts with up and coming independents. And today, I would like to introduce to you Sam Kaplan, who lives in Toronto, the Eglinton Lawrence riding, and amazingly is quite possibly the youngest or close to the youngest candidate I have ever either heard of or had the pleasure of interviewing. So how are you today, Sam?
I'm doing very well, thank you, John. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. Well, as I say, this is a real novelty. Usually people have to spend years in the workforce or in a career or business to get so totally fed up with the political process and the political parties that they decide to run as an independent. But you're obviously starting this quite early. So why?
Yeah, well, I actually experienced disappointment in the party system firsthand. You may not have known this, John, before you saw me online, but I was a member of the NDP for the past 2 years, and I was intending to run as their candidate in Eglinton Lawrence in this election. I volunteered for them. I ended up becoming the vice president and then the president of the local NDP riding association. And what I saw happen internally, and also the way I was treated as a prospective candidate by the party and someone who is especially left-wing and outspoken and willing to criticize the party, which is simply put, not something the top party brass is too fond of. I was just really soured by my experience, and I still love the NDP because of how fantastic the people that make up its base are, how dedicated and principled those people are. But the way the party is at the moment simply isn't conducive to the kind of change I would like to see in our politics and in our society. And essentially, I failed the party's candidate vetting process for what I believe to be rather frivolous reasons. I don't need to go into too much detail there. I was also just treated very unprofessionally and disrespectfully by the party. And I decided that even though I wouldn't necessarily be running under a party banner, that I still wanted to rep all the same issues. I still wanted to get the experience of running as a candidate and get my name out there in the community for, you know, future endeavors, whether those are electoral endeavors or not. And I said, screw it. I have the month of May free, so I'm going to run. I want to speak to folks about the issues that are important to them, you know, maybe explain to people in a few ways how I think we could be doing things a bit better. And even if I don't get elected, even by pushing the envelope on a number of progressive issues, things I'm prioritizing in my campaign are items like ODSP, providing housing for as many people as possible with a, you know, ultimate long-term goal of housing for all, increasing the size of our public transit system and so forth. So even by pushing the needle on these issues and by speaking to folks, even if I'm moving, if I'm shifting the Overton window here, that's already a victory, regardless of how many votes I earn on June 2nd.
Well, that is really, really interesting to hear your description of that, Sam. So in a nutshell, you love what the NDP stands for, at least in theory, but the reality of it is that the party is just not functioning in a way to make that stuff happen in the way you'd like. Is that a fair statement or not quite?
That is word for word correct.
Word for word. So yeah, that would be fair then, yes?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, I've got to tell you that I think a lot of people, you know, you could substitute NDP for liberal, conservative. We are seeing, leaving aside the candidate vetting process, which you know, I've heard my share of horror stories over the years. I mean, we now have, you know, these parties basically just throwing people out, you know, for reasons, you know, whether you agree with this or not. I mean, the fact remains the parties are just throwing people out, you know, who are not, you know, sort of towing the party line. I guess the phrase is removing them from caucus or something like this. So these political parties, you would agree in many respects are actually antithetical to the democratic process?
Perhaps not antithetical, but certainly detrimental.
Okay.
But right. That's splitting hairs.
Yeah, well, no, that's fair. Okay, that's fair. But in any case, it does seem to me, and this is, you know, I suppose why my own interest in this goes back so many years, that the political parties definitely make it harder for people who want to make a difference to make a difference, don't they?
Yes. And in fact, I, you know, obviously I still have tons of friends in the NDP, and a few of them have actually wanted to engage in more genuine and separate from electoral politics, on the ground, community-based work, setting up, you know, their own sort of almost independent activism through the machine of their local riding associations. And generally, I've heard that that's something the party is not terribly fond of. They don't want to really break out of those traditional political conventions and do something that's radically different. So yeah, even outside of who gets to be a candidate, I would say that's true.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, you know, we were chatting before we hit the record button, and, you know, you were telling me a little bit about what you're doing with your life, where you are at school and your program, and maybe you could introduce yourself a little bit from that perspective. So who's Sam anyway?
Yeah, well, I'm Sam Kaplan. I'm a 19-year-old undergraduate student. I just finished my second year majoring in globalization studies at Western University, and in September, I'm starting at their Ivy Business School for a two-year program. And after that, I'm ready to get out of school as soon as possible so I can get out there and find a career for me that is both fulfilling to me and, more importantly, something that gives back to the community in some way, and preferably some way that's politically charged. And I'm already trying to get a bit of experience in this regard as I'm running as an independent candidate in Eglinton Lawrence in this provincial election.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting that, you know, the Ivy Business School, of course, is, you know, definitely world renowned. Okay. You know, et cetera. And I think a lot of people, at least at first blush, would think, what? This guy's a card carrying member of the NDP and he's doing a business degree at Western. And I mean, I can see how these can easily be reconciled. You know, no problem, because, you know, this is really about effective management. And, you know, you want to make change in the world, you know, you got to have effective management. Is that how you sort of view this, threading the needle?
Yeah, it is. I don't have any interest in engaging in the business world beyond school. But the skills that I, you know, am going to learn there will be transferable to just about anything. The connections that you make at a place like that are invaluable. So there's a lot of value in going there, despite my lack of interest in that niche area, because it's so broadly applicable to so many different career fields.
Absolutely. Well, maybe you can become the CFO of the Independent Candidates Movement, you know, and this can be the beginning or something like that.
Yeah, who knows?
It's unusual. It's unusual for somebody as young as you, at least in my experience, you know, again, it's just my perception, which may be limited. Somebody as young as you, you know, to run. Now, do you think that if you had not had this sort of negative experience with the NDP brass, for lack of a better phrase, that you would have run, or do you regard this as sort of a response to, you know, what you think they were doing or not doing?
Well, if I had passed their vetting process, then I would almost certainly be their candidate in Eglinton Lawrence right now. They didn't have anyone else for a few months before they found someone last minute who does fortunately live in the riding and is actually going to work hard as a candidate. So I'm glad about that. But yeah, they had no one.
Would support their candidate in a general sense.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know if in this particular riding where the NDP is really not strong, they would receive much concrete support. But yes, of course, they receive general support. They have to. And what I will say, though, as far as the framing of my election campaign goes, I announced my decision to run and made my decision to run as an independent in the wake of what happened to me, you know, with the NDP. But this election campaign is not at all about trying to spite the NDP or even so much. I mean, maybe a little bit, just in the sense that I'm trying to push all parties to the left or on specific policy issues. But this is not about trying to, you know, teach the NDP a lesson or really, it's just not about them at all. It's really just
parties
about
are not fit for learning lessons, Sam. Okay. you know, in my experience, that's why they're called parties. Okay. It's essentially some kind of a coalition where they're going to agree with each other, regardless of whatever it is they're even talking about, sort of thing. All right. So what, now the good thing about the, I haven't run provincially for some time, but it's very easy to get on the ballot as a, you know, in the provincial election.
Yeah.
Is it only 30 signatures?
25.
Is it 25?
Yeah, and you know, you get some extra to be safe. Okay. They always reject
maybe,
some.
Maybe when I did it, I got 5 extra then or something like that. But I mean, it's, you know, it's the sort of thing where my guess is that you just walked down your street, probably knocked on the door and, you know, had your 25 or 30 signatures within an hour or two. Is that right?
It took a bit longer than that. I also got a bunch from some friends and, you know, my parents, of course. And yeah, then I maybe spent an hour and a half canvassing my street and I finished it off. Mm-hmm. The hardest part was setting up your campaign bank account. I spent 2 hours at the bank getting that done.
Now that is interesting. Talk to me about that. Why was that hard? I mean, I agree with you having had this experience, but I think it might be interesting for people to hear this.
Yeah, I am glad that I did it because I did end up collecting some donations, which enabled me to produce a lot of flyers and a few lawn signs and also pay my graphic designer because they, well, not just because, but also because they did such a fantastic job with those designs. But I think there are plenty of people who will want to run as independent candidates or fringe party candidates that don't really need or want to collect donations or spend any money on their campaigns. And for them, I mean, I'm certainly not a legal expert as far as elections is concerned, but I certainly think that the need to have a financial agent and a bank account is perhaps an unnecessary barrier to entry into, you know, getting involved in electoral politics. If someone wanted to dispute this with me and give me a really good reason that candidates should have a bank account, I'm all ears, because I could be missing something obvious here. But if a candidate like doesn't want to spend or receive any money, then I feel like there should be some sort of mechanism where they can sign some form from the election authorities telling them so and leaving it at that.
Yeah, and just you know, allowing them to be on a ballot sort of thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, having, you know, experienced this from all of these perspectives, a candidate, as an official agent, you know, I agree with you. This stuff is a problem. And, you know, banks are not necessarily all that enthusiastic about, oh, we've been waiting for you all day, Sam, you know.
Yeah, they don't make any money off these accounts.
Well, yeah, yeah, you know, that too. And, you know, they have their own regulatory issues. But all right. I mean, another way of looking at that is that these requirements that many people regard as trivial and some would be regard as obvious and necessary are actually impediments, you know, to a certain type of person getting on the ballot, aren't they?
Yeah. For one, you know, even just people who aren't involved in the community, but I think more so where this might become an issue of accessibility is if someone has some sort of physical disability that literally just prevents them from going and knocking on doors. And obviously there's also the barrier there that it's harder to be a candidate if you can't go knocking on doors. But of course, and everyone should still have the opportunity to do it. So yeah, it's
right. Well, it's a very, very hard road for candidates who are not, you know, associated with one of the mainstream parties. There's no doubt about it. It's a lot of work. And You know, I have discovered over the years, although this is obvious in hindsight, right, that, you know, it involves a lot of things that a lot of people either don't appreciate the importance of or just don't know how to do, you know, et cetera. So it can be difficult. So you said you had the month of May off, which I thought I heard you say. So I am inferring from that that you're basically devoting this month to getting the word out and getting as many votes as you can. Talking to as many people as you can, is that right?
That's exactly right. I'm very, very fortunate to have this opportunity in two ways. One, because my school already ended for the year, and I'll be working in the summer months, but I'm fortunate enough that I'm not in the financial need to be working this month, meaning that I will, yeah, be able to dedicate 100% of my time this month to this election campaign. And you know, getting out there and essentially knocking on as many doors as I can. Another impediment I face as an independent candidate is, of course, I don't have access to constituents' phone numbers or emails. So I have no way to do cold calls or mass emails.
Now that I was not aware of. What's the relationship between being an independent candidate and not having access to that stuff?
Well, registered political parties are simply given these massive databases by the election authorities. You know, since I was with the NDP for a while, I had access to the NDP's database, and, you know, there was a name and address for just about every adult human being living in the riding. So, and you know, there were certainly certain
Ontario, is it?
Well, in Ontario too, yeah, I had access to that as well. But it's actually kind of an interesting privacy issue. Oh, sorry.
Elections Ontario, or are you just saying the parties happen to have it?
The parties get it, I believe, from Elections Ontario, and then also just maybe from years and decades of collecting data.
Okay, so it's not, I don't think you're precluded from getting that information from Elections Ontario.
Well, I am able to get a list of all the registered voters or eligible voters maybe, but it does not come attached with any contact information, okay, rendering it essentially useless.
I mean, no matter how you view it, I agree, all right, that you're effectively shut out from the beginning.
Yeah.
So you and I would agree that whatever opportunities you have to be created by you and you alone, correct?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. But, you know, your age and your enthusiasm, I think arguably if you can just get some contact with anybody, you know, it's going to give you a huge advantage. Now, I'm just kind of curious, how would you approach somebody? Imagine that I'm in your riding and you're wanting to introduce yourself. Would you mind just giving a bit of a sample of what the interaction?
Yeah. Good morning. My name is Sam Kaplan, and I'm running as an independent candidate here in the upcoming provincial election. And then sometimes the person will respond saying, oh, cool, or oh, I'm not interested. And oftentimes they just sort of are processing it and don't respond at all. And if they don't, I will continue. The reason I'm running, despite the fact that as an independent, it's a bit of a long shot, is because, frankly, I'm sick and tired of established politicians and political institutions that are working for the rich and powerful and not so much for the vast majority of us. And, you know, by engaging with thousands of folks in the riding like yourself, by speaking to you about the issues, my hope is that through this campaign, I can push the envelope on a number of progressive issues, on items like ODSP, on education, on housing and public transit and so forth. And then at that point, it would probably turn into a bit more of an open conversation. You know, I asked them how they've been doing for the past 2 years, you know, hanging on with COVID and everything else. And if there are any particular issues or concerns that are important to them.
Yeah, we're asking how they feel about the election generally.
I don't. That's actually a pretty good question. I may actually try that out.
You should incorporate if you want to get them talking. I mean, you know, most of these, you know, my perception of this is that most of these people are just so fed up and disgusted, they don't care if anybody asked them how they actually felt about the whole thing, you know, rather than just sort of, you know, trolling for their votes. I mean, maybe it would, you know, be a way to get a conversation going. I don't know.
That's actually an excellent idea, and I'm going to try that out today.
Yeah, let me know, you know, let me know if it works. But flexibility is the name of the game, right? Because you never know. You know, they say, get out of here or I'll kill you. You know, would you just me or would you kill any candidate?
Yeah. And the answer would probably be yes.
Now, that, I mean, people are very, very clearly disillusioned. So let's talk a little bit about You know, what's that phrase, be the change you want or something like that?
That you want to see.
The change you want to see, yeah, okay. What is it? What's your vision anyway? What in the world of Sam Kaplan would the city of province of Ontario, the city of Toronto, the world look like?
Oh man, that is a big question.
You're kidding, nobody's asked you that?
No, I guess because people are focused on the pragmatic, quote unquote, or what's tangible, but it's important to, you know where you're coming from as far as your values and your, you know, long-term ideals are concerned. So I give myself the ideological label of socialist. So broadly speaking, I believe in a society that is not just run democratically as far as conventional politics is concerned, but is also democratically run as far as the economy is concerned. And what I mean by that, well, is complicated. It can mean, broadly, the easiest way to describe it is the workers or the society at large collectively owns what's called the means of production, the stuff you use to produce other stuff, capital. And the reason that I believe in a society that's organized like that is because if we all collectively, you know, essentially manage what we produce, and that doesn't mean that everyone is involved in every single decision that we're making, it just means that we all maybe not have a vote, but have the ability to influence it at least, then each and every one of us can work together to shape our own economic destinies. And of course, while working in the economy, it would be much easier to guarantee that by participating in the economy and by participating in society, that every single person is able to actually reap the benefits of that economic output and actually able to put a roof over their head, have food on the table, and live a dignified, happy life. And in addition to that, and this is where I think independent candidates, perhaps of all ideological stripes, will like what I say here, is what this also means to me is a broader participatory form of democracy. Switzerland has a form of direct democracy where everything is just put to referendum. And I'm not sure if that's the most efficient way, but similarly, I like the idea of finding a way. And I think by increasing political engagement at the workplace through things like worker cooperatives and economic democracy, it may encourage greater political engagement from more people on the local level. And having people work together to make community-based decisions together, you know, what gets built here, or what sort of events are we going to hold, or what sort of new laws and legislation are we going to recommend, you know, to whatever the central authority is. That sort of stuff, I think, would really make each and every community a lot more vibrant. And it would empower a lot of communities that perhaps right now don't really have much or perhaps any political power at all. Now, these ideas are abstract. In some instances, they're being put to practice to varying extents in, you know, certain places. My biggest political inspirations are two places that most people haven't heard of. One is the Chiapas region of Mexico, where a rebel group called the Zapatistas are running this libertarian socialist society, where their healthcare system in this, you know, rural province of Mexico or state of Mexico is better than that of the United States, for instance. And they essentially ensure that everyone is at least able to survive. And there's a similar society in northeastern Syria, of all places, run by their local Kurdish population called Rojava. And they also run things with democratically run autonomous localized communities. And I hate talking about this, not because I actually don't like talking about it, but if I'm talking about it in a way where I'm trying to promote my own ideas, these things are so complex and frankly, to the extent that I would need to do a lot more research on it to have a much broader picture on it, that it's not really going to bring anyone over necessarily. It's not really going to give anyone a really solid, simple, tangible idea of what I stand for. But those are the things sort of working at the back of my mind that are influencing the, I suppose, political prescriptions that I try to come up with.
Well, yeah, so many, many years ago, I think John F. Kennedy, either before he was president or when he was president, made his inaugural speech, actually, said something to the effect of society that can't, that something like won't can't or won't care for its weakest citizens, cannot protect its richest, something to that effect. And that sounds a little bit like what you're saying, a little bit. Yes, no?
I think so. I'd have to see the exact quote, but certainly in regards to protecting its poorest citizens. And even the word protecting does feel a bit paternalistic to me, though, of course, I, you know, support the broad welfare state to ensure that no one falls through the cracks. That's why I really like the idea of focusing on community-based political power, because that enables poor people, marginalized people, by working together to uplift themselves, rather than relying on government or on private business or any other established institution.
You know, you're promoting a system, it sounds like, where people are empowered through the political process to do things that will make their situation better. Is that
yes?
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, that's very, very interesting. Now, I would guess that it's impossible to have that sort of conversation with somebody one-on-one when you're handing out flyers in a more sort of practical, meaningful, visual way. What might you say? We need affordable housing for people, for example.
Yeah. And what I'm also trying to do with this campaign, because, you know, I do have a list of policies that I'm fighting for on my flyer. In fact, I should send you my flyer so you can take a look at it. On the backside, I explain a bit, and also on my website, actually, too, samkaplan.ca. I explain how I would try and conduct myself as a member of provincial parliament, and also, of course, to, you know, a less powerful extent, if I'm not elected as well. And that is, in addition to the role of working on and voting on legislation at Queen's Park, which is extremely important, and engaging in that general work of helping people out who need help, who come to your constituency office, which is also extremely important work, I think that our elected representatives would be a lot more effective in bringing about change if they went above and beyond on the ground in their communities. And I don't just mean, holding community events, though, of course, that's also important. What I mean is engaging with whatever existing grassroots organizations are there. Maybe there's advocacy groups. For example, I would potentially try and work with tenant groups like ACORN. And engaging in genuine political organizing, which, of course, at my young age is something that I'm still hoping to get a lot more experience with. And really trying to bring about those changes and really trying to empower those communities without worrying too much about the impact of legislation on the community, really just focusing on creating community-based institutions, things like a mutual aid network or a joint advocacy group that will join the member of provincial parliament or elected representative in the fight, perhaps through means of protest or direct action, something along those lines, to try and pressure the government into enacting better legislation. And this is also something that it's hard to say the super precise steps you would take until you actually get elected or get connected with a particular organization in your community. But this sort of grassroots mobilization is the sort of thing that I think elected representatives, at the very least, ought to get their hands dirty in.
Yeah, so I mean, in a general sense, what you want is a political process where, the individual constituents have some say in what's going on here, and that the politicians, whether they're members of political parties or elected candidates, et cetera, are responsive to their individual constituents. That sounds like
yes,
what you're saying. Is
exactly.
Right?
And
well,
the way
what's there to not like about that? I mean, why would somebody not like that?
I don't think it's a matter of not liking it. I think most people would just find it hard to believe that we can get to a point where we're there, because it is very difficult, simply because of the fact that the vast majority of people are not politically engaged. In a lot of cases, it's due to apathy with the way that things are now, or disappointment. And in a lot of cases, it's also just because people are so busy putting food on the table, working 40 plus hours a week. You get home, you're tired, and how much time do you have to research or go out and advocate for a particular political issue? I mean, it's just, you know, when, who has the time and the energy?
I think people are tired and they sort of given up, but there may be another aspect to it. I mean, so let's say they, you know, people vote for Sam. There's good news and bad news. Okay. The good news is that in voting for Sam, people are voting for the opportunity to play a role in the political process and their destiny, I suppose. Although this stuff does take time, the bad news is that along with that comes the responsibility to play a role. And I wonder if the latter isn't the whole reason the political parties exist, right? Because people don't want the responsibility of being involved in this stuff.
I think so. I think also just a big reason of the need for political parties is that it's really hard, as we know, as independent candidates to, you know, round up sufficient resources to run a winning campaign, and political parties get around that by pooling their resources. It's kind of a messed up corporate-esque way of, you know, pooling the collective resources of the community into a joint effort, just, you know, to an end that is not as appealing to either of us. But, well, what I'll say quickly actually is I think something that would both at least somewhat improve the state of our political parties and also improve the odds that independent candidates get elected is electoral reform. The two systems that I especially favor are mixed member proportional representation and single transferable vote. They're both proportional. One is essentially you have a regional multi-seat district where you actually vote twice. Once for your local candidate, the same way you do now, and then the second time for your preferred party. And your regional seat acts as a top-up set of seats to ensure that the number of seats each political party has in the legislature is proportional to the party vote. And the second is a ranked choice ballot where, again, there's like multi-seat districts, and this one's a bit more complicated too. It allows voters to both rank their candidates and still see a proportional representation of political parties in their legislature. I don't think I did those explanations justice. My excuse is that it's a bit early in the morning.
What you're saying is that you think it's time for the first past the post system to end. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, well, first past the post absolutely has to go. Although, for example, the system the Liberals are proposing, which is IRV, instant ranked ballot, is not really much better. Because it's still not a proportional system.
I don't think that the political parties are clear beneficiaries of the first past the post, right? Mm-hmm. No one's having. I think it's somewhat unrealistic to expect them to support something that is ultimately not helpful to them or probably not helpful. But that's all very, very interesting. You know, you've got a lot of great ideas. You've got a lot of energy. And I think that there should be 100,000 Sam Kaplans in the country, at least,
you know. Thank you.
Out trying to, at least think about these issues. I mean, I don't, you know, I mean, what's that saying? Okay. If you're 20 and there's not a liberal, there's something wrong with your heart. And if you're 40, you're not a conservative, there's something wrong with your head or something. Leaving aside, you know, where you come down on the specific issues, you know, which is, you know, interesting. I think that you're doing a really, really fantastic thing here. And I want to congratulate you for doing it. And I think it takes courage. And as somebody who is, you know, has been interested in this as a problem for a lot of years, I want to personally thank you for, you know, taking the initiative and the time, you know, to get out and do this kind of stuff. And, you know, I hope that as you go door to door, you get people saying, Sam, thank you. Are you getting some of that?
Yeah, and thank you, John. Those are incredibly kind words. I really appreciate it. I don't know if I've gotten any thank yous, but it's interesting. Because obviously I've done a lot of canvassing for a political party before this, and people will, you know, hear the term NDP, especially in this riding where they're not popular, and be like, okay, I don't want to talk to you. But when it's an independent, I've had far fewer doors slammed in my, well, not slammed, closed in my face. And there are some people who ask, wait, which party are you running for? And then I say, independent, no party. And they're like, oh, then yeah, actually, you know what? I will take one of your flyers. Because there are a lot of people out there. And, you know, there was one guy yesterday who even took one of my lawn signs that was like this. It was just, you know, not really into any of the political parties, for some of the reasons that we discussed. And, you know, they're willing to support me, which is, it's honestly really exciting because this is a whole set of voters that none of their candidates are really going to be able to tap into. And more importantly than the votes is it's a sentiment that I can tap into in a way that, as I said before, potentially leads to a shift in the Overton window and to a community that is more politically engaged.
What you mean by Overton window? Oh. I mean, I've heard that expression, but I've heard it so few times in my life that I expect most people haven't. So Overton.
Fair enough. Thank you. What? The Overton window is essentially the spectrum of what at the current time is considered within the political mainstream or politically acceptable. And anything outside of that Overton window is considered radical. So I think in a lot of ways, over the past, you know, century or so, the Overton window has shifted in a more progressive direction on social issues, you know, things like queer rights on, well, especially on, you know, on civil rights and on, you know, the need for reconciliation with Indigenous peoples living within the land of this country. In that respect, I think
people who aren't interested in this, cannabis legislation would be a great.
There you go. You know. Yeah. There's another one where, right, like now the idea of decriminalizing all drugs has also just shifted to within the Overton window. Whereas before, you know, if you said that maybe 10 years ago, it would have been political suicide. Mm-hmm. But now I'm very thankful that both the NDP and the Green Party are supporting it. And of course I am too, although it is primarily a federal jurisdiction issue. And then, of course, I think on economic issues, it's a lot more fuzzy, I think, in certain respects. Obviously, you know, very, very gradually, our universal healthcare system has been expanded over time. But of course, in recent years, there's also been attacks on it. And I think some would argue even covert attempts to privatize it. And so in that respect, you could argue that the Overton window is shifting towards the right now in that respect. So it's complicated, but my hope is that I can do my part in shifting that, in shifting what is politically acceptable in a direction that is favorable to policies that are good.
All right. Well, it's the way you describe this is this is the first time I've actually, as I was listening to you talk, actually thought about the Overton window a little more than I suppose I ever have before. But it does seem to me that moving the Overton window or shifting or whatever word you want to use really is dependent on exactly what you're doing, you know, to getting, you know, a pressure at the grassroots level to do that. I mean, I doubt very much that the legalization of cannabis and that sort of thing, you know, started at the party level.
No, people have been advocating that for, well, it was, you know, since before I was born.
That is true. Yes, that definitely in your case, that is true. Okay. All right. This has been a really, really interesting chat this morning, and I thank you for taking the time to do this. Do you feel that you have, leaving aside, you know, your views on specific issues and that, do you feel, having gotten started in this process, that you have, you know, a lot in common with other independent candidates? I mean, what would your message be to other independent? There aren't that many. Yesterday, there were only like 35 registered or something.
That's a lot more than I saw before.
Message. Sorry?
I last time I checked the Wikipedia article on the list of candidates in the provincial election, I only saw 10, including myself. But it's good to hear there are more.
Elections Ontario website.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
That's where I got the number. Yeah, the Wikipedia thing, which I actually went there.
It takes
first.
Days to update, yeah. Anyway,
correct. What would be your message to your colleagues in change? What's called colleagues in change?
Yeah, I think it takes a particularly masochistic person to run as an independent. You know, knowing that the odds of your victory are not high. I'm going to say that diplomatically, and you know, you have to think very carefully. You know, when you're not a candidate who's, you know, very clearly in the running to win, what are your reasons for running? Why are you doing this? What are you hoping to accomplish by running? And I think there are a lot of good reasons for running. Otherwise, you know, I wouldn't be doing this right now.
Well, and some of them, list some of them.
Well, as I said, shifting that Overton window and really just engaging with folks in the community, helping people to feel heard when perhaps, you know, maybe there hasn't been someone that's come by that's really sympathized with them or agreed with them on certain issues before. You know, getting your name out there for future work in your community, holding the other candidates to account. As you may have been able to tell, I do think of myself as a fairly skilled speaker and rhetorician, and I would really like to be invited to at least one of our local candidates' debates. So essentially I can, and of course in a respectful and factually correct manner, tear the other candidates apart.
I genuinely think,
in addition to being very fun, that there is a genuine political value to that. So there are lots of reasons to do this. Also, it's fun. I enjoy knocking on doors and talking to people. So, you know, I guess what I would say to my fellow independent candidates is, you know, you're doing some very underappreciated work. Good for you for doing it, and thank you for doing it. And also, if you're listening to this right now, I'd love for you to get in touch. I would love to speak with you. And of course, I wish you all the best with your independent campaign.
Absolutely. I think that all the, however, you know, the small number of independent candidates should come together in a coalition, you know, at the very least, a support group and talk about stuff. I assume there are candidate debates in Eglinton Lawrence. Is that correct?
Yes. So my local school trustee is hosting one on education. It had already been advertised in a limited capacity, and I called her office and also sent her an email asking to be invited. And she said no, because it had already been advertised with the four major candidates, and quote, she felt it must, she must keep to that.
Really idiotic response. Oh my God.
Yeah, no, that's obviously a bit of a pretense. I don't agree with it. Not at all. I do think there are understandable reasons for inviting major party candidates.
You know, you should respond. You should say, look, as an independent, I'm the only one who has anything relevant to say.
Yeah, well, I'm also the only candidate who's actually a student under the Doug Ford government in the TDSB. So there's that. The NDP candidate is also currently a student in, I think, maybe undergrad or grad school. But I'm the only one with any recent public school experience. So I would think that perspective would be valued at an education-centered debate.
But they're not interested in that. They're just interested in, you know, whatever. So are there any that you've been invited to?
Not yet. I'm hoping to get myself invited to the B'nai B'rith debate that they're hosting here. Eglinton Lawrence is the third most Jewish riding in the country. 1 in 5 people here are Jewish, including myself. And somehow this time, there's never only one. I'm the only Jewish candidate in the election at the moment who's registered in this riding. And they're actually hosting the debate at the synagogue that I went to Hebrew Sunday school for 7 years at, and whose rabbi performed my bar mitzvah, or the former rabbi. So I'm super duper relevant at this local candidates debate. So far, they've only advertised it with the Liberal and PC candidates. So I'm hoping that means, since they'll probably be adding on the NDP and Green candidate, that maybe they'd be willing to add me on too.
Very aggressive on this.
I'm going to go visit my synagogue. Well, it's not, I haven't attended there in years, but I'm going to go visit the synagogue today. And when they open on Monday, I might even go to B'nai B'rith headquarters just to ask them to let me in.
I think, you know, you can expect that you're going to have to be very, I mean, that was, you know, I created something called Toronto Danforth Debates a number of years ago. And the reason I did this was to make sure that all the candidates were able to participate in the debates. So that, well, they weren't being invited to the debates. Well, I guess I should organize the debates then. You know, to make sure it's sort of thing, right?
But this is, well, let me ask you, John, is it impossible to moderate and organize a debate where there are more than 4 or 5 candidates?
Oh, the greatest one I ever did had 10 or 12.
And there you go.
It was awesome. I mean, I'll send you a YouTube.
Please do.
I mean, it was incredible. Actually, I think you need more than 4 or 5 sometimes. I mean, look, to be very clear here, okay, basically what they're trying to do is monopolize the political process. Okay, the parties by their very nature are anti-democratic. you know, they don't want anybody involved in it except themselves. I mean, the whole thing is, you know, it's ridiculous. And the party candidates, in my experience, are often far, far weaker than the independent candidates. I mean, they just sit there with their stupid, you know, list of things they can say and not say. And in some cases, you know, the parties, you know, are even told by the high command to not appear at debates, right? I mean, it's absurd. Yep. I mean, as with the party system and control of this thing, the whole House of Commons and the provincial legislature, giant waste of taxpayers' money, you know, if they're going to be just beholden to, you know, the party leader or whatever. But, you know, you and I can't change that in this call. But what we can do is encourage independent and small party candidates.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Sam, thanks a lot for your work. And
thank you, John.
I want you to keep in touch with me over the next month. Send me emails and, you know, maybe we can pick up on this again, you know, your campaign. And I don't live in your riding, but if you give me a lawn sign, I'd be happy to put your lawn sign in my front yard anyway.
Thank you. The only reason I'll say no to that is because I don't want to confuse the voters in your neighborhood.
It's okay. It's
yeah. Okay. But I appreciate that so much.
All right. Well, let's maybe we'll pick up on this again later, but this has been a great chat and I appreciate your taking the time.
Yeah, it's been a massive pleasure.
Oh, and in closing, how would people get in touch with you? Where would they read about you, learn about you, support you?
Yeah. My website is samkaplan.ca. My name is unusually spelled, so I'll say samkaplun.ca. And my email is samkaplan.eglaw@gmail.com. My contact info is on the website. So samkaplan.ca, check it out. I'm also Sam Kaplan on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So please, I would love to hear from you. So reach out to me if you want to chat or have any questions.
I have some advice for the voters of Eglinton Lawrence, and it's simple. On June 2nd, 2022, vote for Sam.
Agreed.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you, John.